This episode is brought to you by Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. In breaking news, leading scientists worldwide are conducting experiments to determine if Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the perfect combination of peanut butter and chocolate. However, it appears the study was inconclusive, as the scientists couldn't help but eat all the Reese's. Because when you want something sweet, you can't do better than Reese's. Find Reese's now at a store near you.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
I like now. What's up, everybody? Welcome to IGN Game Scoop. I'm your host, Damon Hatfield. Joining me this week here in our LA studio is Justin Davis.
Ooh.
And we are also joined from his home pinball arcade, Sam Claiborne.
Hey, I wish I could be there in person. And maybe there won't be like saws across the street in my home pinball studio this week, as there has been in previous weeks. As known as keen listeners.
Sometimes I hear some.
Come down somehow.
Yes, the trees do have to come down somehow.
They gotta come down.
What are you gonna do? Just leave the tree there?
Yeah,
this is
a
city.
Expect these poor people to use axes. They have power tools. They gotta use it.
These poor people. Well, we have a great show for you this week. Even though you only get three of us this week, the triple scoop. We're gonna talk about Bethesda's bizarre behavior, and that will not be the last alliteration of this show.
Just. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. We'll also be discussing a listener email. Interesting topic. What are the gateway drugs of games? Allow our listeners.
You had not gotten to that yet. You'd only gotten to the alliteration.
Yeah. So I'm just saying that's I'm doing it all again now.
Understood.
What are the gateway drugs of games? Our viewer or listener will explain. But first, on the subject of the games we're playing, I am back on my Baldur's bullshit. Back into Baldur's Gate 3.
Good.
After 2 months, and I was a little bit intimidated, but it took me maybe an hour just to ease back into it, and it's great. I'm loving that game. I finally made it to the Underdark last night.
Are you in a certain act? Are you in act
two? Well, I think, I mean...
Underdark is still act one.
Yeah, but is that not how you go into act two?
There's two pathways to act two. You can go through the Underdark, or you can go over the mountain pass.
Yeah, which I got to, and then the game was like, just a heads up, you're way underleveled for this area. So I was like, okay, I'll search for the Underdark.
Yeah.
And it took me like several nights because there's four different routes into the Underdark and none of them are straightforward. I went through the Hag's Tunnel.
At least four, yeah. Oh, that's an unusual way to get in
there.
Is
it?
Yeah.
That's what I ended up doing. Went through that whole thing. I fought the hag and then accidentally knocked her out instead of killing her. So she's just unconscious.
Oh, no.
Is she going to join your party?
No, I don't think that's possible. And I wouldn't want her anyway.
No.
Would not want. She's not a pleasant individual to be around, Sam.
She might be the most evil character in the game, including who ultimately reveals himself to be the villain of the game.
Well, yeah.
That could be an asset for any team.
Yeah, that's true. Someone that will do just really evil stuff.
Yeah.
Kidnap maidens.
But it is great, and I love it. And, you know, we've talked a lot about how I'm story is not usually a draw for me in games, but man, in my campsite, I'll just talk to all my companions and just listen to them talk whatever they have to say. And that's very unusual for me because the game is that well written.
Well, and you're still at the part of the game where everybody starts the game as kind of an asshole. And that's in order for them all to have real actual character arcs.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
But, you know, and then it's satisfying and really good from the beginning, but it becomes kind of ultra satisfying and really, really good as these characters mature and become friends and sort of change or in some instances regress and like, oh, it's just great.
Yeah.
Great game.
Really.
Were you a talker in Red Dead or Mass Effect?
You mean just like talking to people? Yeah.
Yeah, those are games where those opportunities arose a lot. I found myself in both those games talking to people at camp, basically.
Yeah, so definitely like more often than in other games for sure, just because those games are also very well written. Mm-hmm. But I think this is like a game where I'll just listen. Any dialogue in the game I will listen to, even seek out, because it's so well done.
There was a bug when I played Baldur's Gate 3. Will would constantly have the little dialogue thing over his head, no matter what. Even if he didn't have, like when he didn't have new dialogue, a little alert was still there that like he has new dialogue.
Yeah.
And like I think that they squashed that bug in the months since. But it was just, it fooled me every single time. I would go back to camp and I'm like, oh, Will. And I'm like, ah. No, he doesn't have anything to say.
Got me. Anyway, Baldur's Gate 3, if you haven't heard by now, it's a very good video game.
Coming out on Xbox.
Coming out on Xbox. We'll get that release date next week at the Game Awards.
And they announced it.
Woo.
Did you see the patch?
Yeah. The like patch 5, which is out today. We'll have to update. I mean, it adds a whole epilogue, which I'm nowhere near getting to. But
which it is. I mean, look, I think Baldur's Gate 3 is probably my game of the year. I need to reflect between that and Zelda. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, it's really, really good. One of my criticisms is that, especially because it's like a 100-hour game if you're really trying to talk to everybody and do everything, and then it kind of ends a little bit on a whimper. Mm. I mean, not really. Like, I'm not going to spoil anything. It's got this big sort of satisfying conclusion to the storyline, but then it's kind of just like, well, okay, bye. You know, and it needs that kind of like moment. I don't know that much about the epilogue or what it adds, but like, it's a game that's really worthy of one, of just like kind of a final, you know, like Lord of the Rings has like 5 endings, yeah, right? Yeah. And like, It's
supposed to be that. It's supposed to wrap up a bunch of the characters' stories in a better, more fulfilling way.
Yeah, like their story, again, it's kind of hard to get into without spoilers. Like the story's definitely like, it's not like the game felt unfinished. It just felt like you just wanted like another beat, another kind of moment of like closure with them all. And I'm hopeful that the epilogue, like when I play it for myself, I hope it adds that.
Yeah, it's set 6 months after the end of the game. It's in camp.
Oh, it's great.
Everybody's there.
Well,
I mean,
Yeah.
If I have a criticism, and I'd like to hear your thoughts on this, and this could be because I'm playing on PlayStation 5 and dealing with a little bit more of a clunky interface than mouse and keyboard. Mm. In combat, I think there are too many abilities and things that you could do. Like, there's multiple wheels, like 4 or 5 wheels of attacks and spells you can cast for each character, and they're not really explained to you. So just most of the time, I just end up using my basic melee attack or ranged attack, and that gets me through battles.
You're just attacking.
I mean, there's just so much you can do, and it's like, whoa, I don't need all these menus in my face.
There are a lot. So the PC version, and I haven't seen the PC interface with a controller. I've only seen the mouse and keyboard interface, but I feel like the game does a good job. Every character has a million actions that they can perform because there's your standard action. Like every character can shove or sprint or do this or that. There's kind of the standard attacks. Then there's the class specific stuff. Like, you know, fighters have special maneuvers they can do. And like, but at least the sort of hot bar on PC that sits at the bottom of your screen is like pretty customizable and powerful. And you can get it to a place where like, you know, it strikes a balance between being overwhelming but still having everything at your fingertips that you need. Like, it's a little bit of a UI triumph, in my opinion, in combat. Like, inventory management's a different story. It's pretty bad in that game. But
they've actually made fixes to that too with this new patch.
Yeah.
Anyway.
What class is your player character?
High Elf Paladin.
Paladin. Paladin's the right class. You're probably not level 5 yet.
I think I'm level 4.
Yeah. Oof, man. You get a huge power jump at level 5. Every class does. Cool. And that's like
another wheel?
Yeah.
And they pile another wheel on. It's fine. No, I think Paladin, I mean, it's been a little bit since I played the game. I think Paladins and Fighters just get to attack twice each turn instead of once.
Cool.
And so that maybe doesn't sound that cool, but if you think, like, it's literally just doubling your damage.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's good. It feels really good. And every other class has an equivalent of like, you know, druids get something really cool and wizards get something really cool at level 5. That's like a milestone level.
I look forward to it. And Sam, you 100%ed Mario Wonder?
Whoa. I did. I'm the only person on staff to have done so. You have to do a big post-game, cleanup of all your stuff. And I was planning on writing a little 100% guide, but it does the thing that other Mario games do where your like profile picture has these little like used to be stars, but now it's medals. Mm. And there's 6 of them. So you have to get all the 3 coins in each level and you have to do, you know, all this other stuff. But really, you know, finding the secret exits and stuff like that, you can use a guide for all that. What you can't use a guide for is to beat the final trial.
Ooh.
And, you know, if you're not planning on doing that, like watch a video. It's like, it's so unbelievably mean. And I told Damon this earlier. I started playing it like Saturday, like maybe like 9 a.m. And by 10 p.m. that night, I'd beaten it. I took breaks. I was doing things. I had Saturday things to do. Yeah. But I kept coming back. And I was just like, that's how long it took. And I remember the last time this happened, I think it was for Mario Galaxy 2, the final trial. I did that same thing in the office one day. Like the first thing I did was, 'cause I was writing the guide for that game. I came in, I put on my capture, and just sat there and I was just doing it. People were coming by and bugging me all day, you know, and I was just like, I know I'm playing this again. Yes, but I have to focus. And finally got it, but like it was that hard. Like it was that much of a challenge, and it was really, really fulfilling to finish it.
I mean,
and see that final little star next to my name.
It's become like a Mario game tradition. I kind of can't remember when like the final gauntlet in a Mario game started, but like Mario Odyssey.
Oh, actually, Odyssey had one, right?
Yeah, Odyssey. That's what I was just gonna say. It was like I think it's like 25 minutes long, and you get one life, and
that's
you can't.
Right. I forgot about that one.
And so is Wonders kind of like that?
Yep, it's just like that. It's extra long. But the difference is that they, I mean, the final level is a badge trial, which if you've played badge trials throughout the game, you know what they are. They're like a really hard wall jumping segment or a really hard running fast and you can't stop segment, you know. But they just string those together from the hardest of hard ones. And they don't put flags after every single segment. There are some flags in the level, though, some midway points. And so you'll have to like you'll spend 20 lives doing this perfect figuring out how to do a wall jump segment, for instance, right, with disappearing blocks or something like that, and then you get to the next area and you die immediately, and then you realize you're gonna have to get so good at that wall jumping segment that you're able to test the next area, and then you're gonna have to get so good at that you have to like test the next area. So it's just like the muscle memory you develop is the beauty of a platformer Mario game. You know, like, I can now play that level start to finish probably flawlessly, even though I didn't have to play it that way, because, like, it's just locked in there now. And you couldn't do it otherwise. You know, there's no other option. You just have to, like, it's like Mike Tyson's punch out. Mm-hmm. You just have to learn every single button command at the right time. And, you know, that's not for everybody. And the whole game is not like that, you know, but it makes me, like, you know, want that type of level in DLC or something too. Like it's just so well made and such a rush when you get it done. But you know, one thing to 100% this game, you have to get the top of every flag in it.
Yep.
So after getting through this whole level, you can very well beat this like last four segment part without any checkpoints and miss that flag.
Oh no.
Because,
oh my God.
And especially in this level, because like it's one where you're invisible, like you literally can't see your character. So it's like hard to see if you're going to hit the flag or not. It's just mean, you know?
Yeah.
But I got it my first time. If I hadn't, I would have played the level again. Like I would have had to. Like,
you don't have a choice.
I needed the picture of my completed profile for the guide. You know, yeah. Like I didn't have a choice.
Yeah. Well, nicely job, Sam.
Yeah,
no small feet.
And I hope let us know if you do that. Write us, because it was a pretty fun experience. I'd like to hear other people's experiences.
Maybe you should work in game help. yeah. The other thing I've done recently is I watched the first three episodes of Monarch on Apple TV Plus. Anyone else watched it? This is the Godzilla show.
Think?
You watched it, Sam?
Yeah. No, I've completely slipped my mind. There's a lot of things to watch over this holiday break in America. We had a holiday this past week with some days off. And this is the one that I thought, oh, maybe I'll have time to watch this. But no, I'm just playing a dumb Mario level over and over again.
I think it's pretty boring,
aww,
unfortunately.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I mean, I'm three episodes in. My fear all along is that they were not going to have the budget to really show much monster action. And that's absolutely true. And so 3 episodes, 3 hours, maybe a minute, maybe a minute of monster footage in there. And then the rest is just, you know, these human characters talking, and it's not that interesting.
Where are all the monster fights? Get these people out of here.
you joke, but yeah, kind of. It's like interesting. It's like the backstory. There's part of it is telling the backstory of Monarch, the organization that tracks these titans and is aware of them from like the, it goes all the way back to like the 30s, 40s, 50s. And that part is kind of interesting, but it's all just like, it's so stretched out because it's a TV show. If this were like a neat little 2-hour movie, that it might have worked a little bit better.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I was hoping they would kind of like do the kind of twist on it and like be like, oh, we've never heard about kaiju monsters like being, you know, talked about or used or worked into the, you know, reality this way. And I suspect that's what they're going to do with the series, right? Like, they got to do some kind of twistiness with it.
I mean, I hope. Like, I mean, I'm obligated to keep watching as, you know, a Godzilla super fan. I just have to know what's happening with the canon. But I find myself being pretty bored. I do like the fact that they cast Kurt Russell and his son to play the older and younger versions.
That's cool.
Of himself. And that works really well.
That's nice.
I didn't realize this at the time, but his son is the evil Captain America in Falcon and Winter Soldier. Kurt Russell.
I didn't realize that either. But I can now picture that. His face is recognizable as a Russell.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've never seen that character again, by the way, in the MCU.
Yeah, it just disappeared.
I didn't.
Lane from Seinfeld recruited him.
And yep. Then, yeah. What's going on with any of that?
And what happened?
He was recruited. I never finished that series, so I didn't.
That's fine.
Yeah.
I'm caught up on Marvel. I've seen it all. Loki was fantastic.
That's what I hear.
None of that's even in Loki.
I mean, everyone says Loki's fantastic, so I will watch it, even though I was not impressed with season one.
There's a boring minute in that show. It's you really didn't like. I love season one. Well, I like the set dressing alone and Owen Wilson and stuff like that. But I thought it was really good. But dude, season two, oh my gosh!
Oh man,
it's whatever. So sad to watch.
You want to know what show's great for doing an off-topic section real quick? Is Scavenger's Reign on HBO?
I think I've heard about.
So it's an animated show. IGN gave it a 10 out of 10, and we're not alone in that. It's getting critical praise everywhere. And so of course, like I went into it like this show's gonna be really good, but like. It exceeded my expectations. Like, it's amazing. Whoa. Like, it's one of the best things I've watched in a long, long time. And, like, right from moment one, it's a sci-fi show about these people that crash land on an alien planet. And the alien life on the planet is so weird and different, where it's not just like, well, you know, it looks like a horse, but it's like an alien horse. But, like, they're just crazy. Like, crazy alien designs that do all this weird stuff that feels really alien. And it sucked me in from like moment one, and then I just sat there mesmerized watching several episodes. When I saw stills of it, I thought that the art style looked like a little bit boring and bland, but like in motion and when it comes together with everything, like it's really like it's unbelievable and worthy of its masterpiece score from us.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Awesome. Oh, that's great. I cannot wait.
It's great. There's also this new season of Fargo that I have to watch.
Ooh.
That's also supposed to be very good. Anyway, getting back to games. You may have heard this week that Bethesda has been responding to negative reviews of Starfield on Steam. And this is such a bizarre story. First of all, it's unusual for a big AAA developer to do this. I think it's more common for smaller indie devs to...
Well, right. Like, that's been, like, watching this story evolve, that was part of just the cultural conversation the last couple of days has been... Well, actually, this is a really, really normal thing. And if you respond, like when a developer or publisher responds to a negative review, sometimes they'll flip that review. Like, oh, we're working on that bug, or we understand you didn't like that part or whatever. Yeah. And then the negative review will turn positive. And then that can hugely impact people's, you know, where they rank on the Steam store and impact them in the algorithm. But the unusual part is just Bethesda doing it and not some small indie.
Yeah, and... Their responses are like, I don't think the responses are going to be changing any people's minds, because they're responding to reviewers who are saying the game is boring, basically by saying, no, it isn't.
Yeah.
Like, that's what they're saying.
They're not being defensive. They're being very friendly and very nice, but there's an edge of like not really acknowledging people's complaints.
Yeah. Like, so one of these reviews is from someone who has 56 hours logged into Starfield. That's a lot more than I played of Starfield. They called it boring and overrated, as wide as the ocean, as deep as a puddle, blah, blah, blah. A lot of things you've heard about Starfield. And so I'll read the response if you haven't seen this. This comes from a Bethesda Kraken developer is the username, and a sign of Bethesda customer support. It says, "Greetings. Thank you for taking the time to leave a review for Starfield. We are sorry that you do not like landing on different planets and are finding many of them empty. Some of Starfield's planets are meant to be empty by design, but that's not boring. Quote, when the astronauts went to the moon, there was nothing there. They certainly weren't bored." And that's just... The weird thing is, like, that's not some, like, well-known quotation. It's just something their coworker said in another interview, I think with Time Magazine, or with New York Times is what it was with. That's from Ashley Chang. Bethesda's managing director just said that in a New York Times interview. When the astronauts went to the moon, there was nothing there. Why are they just quoting their coworkers?
Whether they're, we don't even know if they're bored or not. They're trying to survive on an alien planet with 60s technology.
Yeah.
It's just a little bit different. Just a little bit different.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
I don't know why.
But it is funny to tell people that, like, hey, this empty place is not, like, it's not actually boring.
They're missing. That's the part that they're missing.
You don't need to tell people that.
Yeah.
It's very normal. Maybe not for a company the size and scope of Bethesda. It's very normal to respond to negative reviews. Like, you see it on the App Store all the time, in game reviews there too. But usually it's like you know, it's an acknowledgement of the issue that they're having. Like, we're sorry you experienced that. We appreciate your feedback. Like, you know, we hope to address this in the future. And Bethesda's has a little bit of an edge of like, nuh-uh.
Yeah, exactly. Because they're responding to reviews that are saying is boring. But that's, you know, what is and isn't boring is entirely subjective. So if this person said it's boring to them, like, it is. You can't just say, no, it isn't, because to that person, it is.
They should probably be, so instead of responding, like, they probably need to be selective about the negative reviews they respond to, and they should be responding to the ones that are like, I don't like that it doesn't have DLSS support, and they can be like, we just added that in a patch. Like,
exactly,
you know, like,
yeah. Like,
yeah, that's smart. Yeah. Yeah.
Measurable.
The whole thing is, like, expensive. Like, just to, like, sit somebody down and pay them all day to go respond to Steam comments. It's really interesting, and it's an effort, right? It's an effort to expend, and like, then you see the number of comments that are negative, and I don't even know if that strategy would even work. So like, is it just even to like turn the tides of the, you know, Steam score? I can't possibly see it being effective. So like, now I'm wondering, like, is this also just a goodwill strategy to get people to be like, well, I'm not down on Bethesda, but I'm, you know, like, yeah, I just didn't like this game. Like, they're cool though, because like after this and Redfall, like, there's a chance that Bethesda's brand is going to be hurt, right? So like, I wonder if there's like some other campaigning going on there for that. It's hard to tell.
Well, the timing is weird, and also like, we should acknowledge that Starfield was a huge success at launch.
Like, yeah, and it got good reviews. You know?
Yeah, and we gave it a good review.
It's favorite game of all time.
Yeah, maybe it's because their user rating, they have a mixed user review rating at 69%. Does that flip at 70?
Probably.
If we could just get a few people to change their mind, you'll be positive.
Yeah, 1%.
So that's what, like, this is one of those things where, like, everyone makes fun of YouTube channels that are like, ring that bell and hit the subscribe button, people. Yeah. But it's a proven fact that, like, you get more subscribers if you say that than if you don't say that. And so it is with this. We're like, we're talking about it on our show, and they caught some negative impressions for it. But it's like, it's proven to work, right? Like, if you do this across 500 user reviews, you can expect X percentage of them to flip from negative to positive. And then that would, I don't know if the threshold is 70%, but that seems very likely that, like, they're right on the line of their mixed, you know, label, which is yellow, turning to, like, the positive review rating, which is blue. Like, that's a very real thing. And then it can make a big difference to their Steam sales.
Some of the reporting today has been as that there's just so few people playing it compared to launch, and
right,
how the player count has dropped so much, you know? And like, you got to think, like, they also want that to not happen, and they want to sell games for, you know, the upcoming holidays. So there must be some kind of push there.
I mean, as I reflect on Starfield, you know, I like Starfield. I agree with IGN's 7 out of 10 review. It's good. Like, it's not my game of the year. I thought it was a good video game. But, like, it not being a contiguous world like Skyrim, where I can go north, south, east, and west, I can just wander around and get into trouble and meet people. It's like, that kind of, it's kind of, like, the game could have been amazing, the best game ever, and I still probably would be less enamored with it than I was with Skyrim, because it's not a single contiguous landmass.
Mm-hmm. There are 16,500 people playing Starfield on Steam right now.
How many are playing Skyrim?
Well, let's see. Just a real-time search is here.
Yeah.
Skyrim, right now, 21,000. 6,000 more people playing Skyrim right now than are playing Starfield.
No. That's the stat. That's the headline. Granted, that's not, you know, all the usual asterisks of like, you know, Starfield is probably an Xbox first game and yada yada, but still.
Yeah. Also, this quote that they're all parroting, this internal quote about how when the astronauts went to the moon, they weren't bored. Like Sam said, it was human beings landing on the moon in the 60s.
Yeah, they were literally going to die
compared to whoever today just sitting on their couch loading up a video game, a medium that showed them thousands and thousands of wonderful things over their lifetime. Yeah, they're going to expect a little bit more than landing on the barren moon.
I also want to point out, too, that it's very, very famous that NASA, these are like Marines, you know, that went to the moon. They've often said they were bored. They would be asked frequently about space. And they'd be like, what's it like? They'd be like, It was boring. They're like, it's a job. That was a frequent response.
I think it was.
Yeah, like, so don't emulate that in a game. The space travel's boring.
The original moon landing, like, I think their schedule was planned down to like the minute, right? Like, during these 2 minutes, you're doing this. These 2 minutes, you're doing that. It's like they were just rote automatons, like ticking boxes the whole time to get there and back alive.
Yeah.
One guy stayed, you know, on the orbiter and didn't go on the lander, right? He just sat in a spaceship and waited for that.
For 3 days.
You know, like, that's what it... He didn't even have fast travel.
Yeah, it's true. Real time. Anyway, funny business going on over at Bethesda. Sam, breaking news.
It's perfectly likable.
Breaking news, Sam. Atari 50 is getting new games on Tuesday.
What?
Yep.
I didn't see that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't hear this.
And there's a mystery that we need to try and solve right now. Wait, where is it? Oh, here, okay. I'm going to mislack you this link, because they're hinting at what these games are, and they're using emojis to hint at what this game is.
Well, but you gotta, okay.
For the people, unless they're arcade games, I'm never gonna know them, because like the Atari cartridge, you know, depth is so deep that I just never even see.
For the people to play along at home, and for me, you also need to read out the emoji.
Yeah. So one of them is basketball, basketball, ball, hoop, basketball, basketball, hoop.
Okay. If you got enough.
And the Atari 2600 game, Basketball, was not already included, so methinks.
Yes. This is great.
The game is afoot.
One is blue diamond, yellow diamond, ear of corn.
Yeah. So what is, yeah, I think it looks orange to me. Blue diamond, orange diamond,
yeah,
ear of corn.
Oranges, yeah.
I
don't know what Atari 2600 game that would be.
This is a fun game, though. This
another
is a, this
one
is a good
is,
game.
Car and then horse. Oh, is that what?
Car and then horse.
Oh, what's the stagecoach?
Ooh.
Is there a stagecoach? I think there is.
There's Chase the Chuck Wagon, which is a...
Oh, that's pretty good, too.
It's like a Purina dog food tie-in.
No, maybe there isn't a stagecoach game, but I thought there was a game where you play a stagecoach. Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of Stampede, when you're just a cowboy and a horse and you're lassoing cows and sheep.
Maybe that's what it is. Car horse. Yeah. And then what's the final?
Final one is like the water blaster and then some like water polo. Maybe there's...
Water polo.
Was there a water polo game?
It's not a gun emoji anymore. There's only the water gun.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Yeah, so but that could just be any shooting.
Oh, okay. This is very confusing.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, it's a mystery.
I wish they'd add more like trailers and just stupid stuff to watch.
Maybe they will.
Did you see that Digital Eclipse announced that the next Gold Master?
That's what I wanted to bring up. Oh, Marianne has brought up here. Those are the emojis.
Thank you, Marianne.
If you're watching now, now you can see. We need some sleuths out there in Scoop Nation to help us identify these games. We know basketball, but what is blue diamond, orange diamond, corn, car horse, and water gun, water polo?
But again, that's just gunship. So it's like, you know, that's probably, I don't know my Atari games very well, but it's...
Oh, maybe it's Battleship or
something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I have no idea.
I bought, just because I want me and my family to all hate each other, we're getting a copy of Battleship for Christmas.
Cool.
It's going to be horrible.
That's just a two-player game, though, right?
Electronic talking battleship?
No, but that's what I had growing up, was electronic talking battleship. Yes, it's only two-player... But whatever, we'll play as teams. It's
a fun game.
Yeah.
My kid can play like Memory.
Yeah.
And so he loves Spider-Man. So I think I'm going to get the Spidey and Friends Memory game. We just turn over the cards.
You could probably do just getting old. You could do Connect Four.
He's played Connect Four.
Yeah. Yep.
Candyland. He gets down with Candyland.
Oh, God. I'm so glad those Candyland days are over.
It's a very boring game. It's basically the monarch of board games.
it's also like it's such a lesson in like bad game design of like you flip over these numbers and if you get the ice cream you skip the entire fucking game. Like it doesn't make any sense at all.
Anyway, Sam was saying, yeah, the next Gold Master series released from Digital Eclipse, this will be the follow-up to The Making of Karateka, is being revealed next week on December 6th, as part of Day of the Devs.
Such a good line. Yeah, like, such a clever.
They released two emoji for it. It's a light bulb, space invader, watermelon.
They didn't release two emoji for it, did they?
No.
Anyway, I don't know what it would be. Maybe they could do Prince of Persia. They should do Prince of Persia.
Ooh.
Yeah, is that too easy?
No, I mean, there's so much, like, Jordan Mechner, like, loves to talk about it and document it. They still have all the original.
I was just wondering, back to back, you know? But I think that's most likely just because it's like they would have done that all at the same time.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Just...
Okay.
There's a Prince of Persia game coming out.
Next week, Thursday, December 7th, are the Game Awards, which means we're going to get a lot of game announcements, reveals. Usually we get world premieres.
But they announced they're retiring that.
This is what Keighley said in an interview. He said, actually, you'll see this year, we often put up those cards, world premiere. We're kind of moving away from that just because everything's kind of, is it a first look? Is it an announcement, etc.? So we just treat it all as great game content.
Sure.
Great game content. I don't know if that's an attempt to temper expectations. I don't know.
I mean, it had become kind of a meme and not necessarily in like a positive way.
That's true. He also tweeted, I think just today, just reviewed the near final cut for one of my favorite announcements next week for the Game Awards. Something new and unexpected.
Ooh, something new? Hmm. What?
New and unexpected.
Diamond core.
In all seriousness, though, I think, Death Stranding 2 was revealed last year at the Game Awards. Keighley and Kojima are buddy-buddy. Mm-hmm. Highly likely we'll get to see more Death Stranding 2.
I hope it's an 11-minute long...
out next year.
Yeah. I hope the trailer is 8 minutes long and incomprehensible.
Yeah.
Yeah, hell yeah.
That's a given. Are you still excited for Death Stranding 2, Sam?
Oh my gosh, yeah, of course. It's my favorite Kojima game.
Even topping Metal Gear Solid 5. Interesting.
Well, Metal Gear Solid 5 was great, but I only got to the first ending of how many there were.
Mm.
I don't think that game ever, like, you're never, like, done with it. There's always, like, there's another chapter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think earlier this year, I sort of, like picked it up and started fresh again, feeling really excited because I hadn't played it since 2015. But it didn't really, I was like, actually, maybe on second thought, I don't feel like playing this again.
Maybe not.
I love stealing all the stuff in that game. It's the best part.
That part is really the
best part.
Yeah. We know Xbox is participating at the Game Awards, so educated guesses, Stalker 2 is supposed to be out in early 2024.
Mm.
I think we'll finally get a release date for that. Hellblade 2 has been shown at the Game Awards since 2019.
Wow.
So.
That's a little bit of a yawn for me at this point.
I'm just saying.
I'm out.
It is time to come out. Like, come on. Put the game out. Give us a release date. Put that game out.
Make sure it's good.
That big giant was scary, though. Remember that?
That, I mean, I liked that giant.
Dude, the trailers for that game are unbelievable.
Yeah. So
I hope the game lives up to them.
Yeah. Any other sort of predictions of what we'll see at the Game Awards? Or maybe let me phrase this another way. On a scale of 1 to 10, how likely is Perfect Dark to be there?
I don't think that'll be there.
That's the.
I think, but Microsoft said they'd show up, right?
Yeah, that's what I just said. Yeah, that's what I said.
Maybe.
Yeah. So there'll be something.
Maybe Perfect. Like maybe Gears.
Gears 6. Yeah, it's about time.
That'd be nice.
And I don't know if that's like a cheat to have like a Bethesda game too, because Microsoft can just be Bethesda stuff now. So much easier for them to show up.
Could get Starfield DLC.
Starfield DLC is a good bet. I think Avowed, since that's supposed to be out next year.
Wait, can't Microsoft just like show off a World of Warcraft, update this year and say mm-hmm. they were there?
Yeah,
that's true.
I bought that Starfield DLC because I bought it came with the premium edition of the game that unlocked it 5 days earlier or whatever.
Mm. Oh yeah, well then I guess I have it too then.
Yeah.
Whatever it's out. Yeah, I don't know. There's a history of companies just showing, announcing games at the Game Awards with a little teaser trailer and then just falling off the face of the earth, like Perfect Dark and like Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I would like to see one of those Marvel games the most, I think, or like Wolverine. I know me and Wonder Woman, I'm just talking about superhero games.
Yeah.
But I'd like to see that or, and then I think Dragon Age is probably like next year, right? So seeing more of that would be cool. I don't know if like that would be likely, but also like, what about that Mass Effect foot? Don't you think we'll see more Mass Effect soon?
But I think they're going to do Dragon Age first.
They keep teasing both of them. Like, I don't really know.
Yeah. Could be Final Fantasy VII Rebirth stuff, Sam.
Ooh.
Yeah, I just want to play that game. Like, I don't really care about seeing a bunch of it. I just can't wait to play it. Although I did I think they did short live streams that showed a bunch of that for Final Fantasy 16. I would like to see that maybe for Final Fantasy 7, but trailers and stuff won't mean much to me.
Yeah,
can't wait to play it.
Anyway, it'll be a fun. It's always fun watching the Game Awards, and we'll be doing our usual post show coverage here at IGN. Please be excited for that.
This episode of Game Scoop is brought to you by NordVPN. As Scoop Nation knows, your Omega Cops have been a little obsessed with a movie called Weekend at Bernie's lately. But as happens too often these days, it is difficult to find it streaming here in the US. That's where NordVPN comes in. With NordVPN, you can switch your virtual location to a more enlightened region where they appreciate the comic delights of Weekend at Bernie's. And it's not just for streaming movies and shows. Switching your virtual location can allow you to save money by purchasing flights, hotels, and subscriptions from other countries at a cheaper price. And you can do all this worry-free as NordVPN threat protection features protect you from viruses, malware, and phishing sites. Best of all, NordVPN costs the price of a cup of coffee a month, and one account can be used on up to 6 devices. To get the best discount on your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/gamescoop. Our link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. That's nordvpn.com/gamescoop. You know, when it comes to wireless carriers, sometimes what you see isn't always what you get, except with Visible. With Visible, what you see is exactly what you get. If you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. With Visible, there are no hidden fees, no fine print, no hassle, nothing to hide. It's just $25 a month, all taxes and fees included. And you don't need more than one line of wireless to save. You can save on a line all to yourself with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. And again, just $25 a month. The future of wireless is here, and it is transparent. If you want more transparency in your wireless plan, you want to be on the Visible plan. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. That's Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Of course, behind the scenes, we're working on our own Game of the Year stuff here at IGN. We've been all been voting on that stuff, so all that will be announced in the coming days and weeks. But I wanted to call attention to something cool that's happening out there in Scoop Nation. Scoop Nation has organized their own Game of the Year voting this year.
I love it.
First time ever. It's happening over in the Facebook group, which you should absolutely join if you haven't already.
Yeah, I'm there all the time. I didn't see this, though. I'll have to check it out.
Big thanks to one of our admins, Matthew Forci, for putting this together. And so, last week they had everyone just vote their top 3 games of the year, and they collated all that data. So now they've got 10 nominees. And the nominees are, not in any order, Sea of Stars, Tears of the Kingdom, Baldur's Gate 3, Spider-Man 2, Resident Evil 4, Hogwarts Legacy, Super Mario Bros. Wonder, Alan Wake 2, Final Fantasy 16, and Star Wars Jedi Survivor.
It's a good list.
Sorry, was Diablo in there?
No Diablo in there.
But Sea of Stars, that's pretty cool.
Sea of Stars?
What happened to Diablo? Everybody thought that'd be Game of the Year.
Oh, I think people soured on that pretty quickly.
Because of the DLC stuff.
Well, yeah, the worm turned on that game really quickly. It launched and everybody loved it and loved its kind of return to its gothic roots. And then I didn't play the game myself, so I don't know how much of this is real versus how much of this is just manufactured gamer rage. The first season or whatever post launch, they kind of fumbled the ball a little bit and have been trying to recover ever since then.
Yeah.
The impression I get.
There's also like gross microtransaction stuff in there too.
Yeah, but that's, it's 2023 in video games, so that's just table stakes at this point.
It's true.
You gotta have a bunch of monetization garbage to ignore.
Well, voting in the Scoop Nation Game of the Year award it goes through Monday night. What is Monday? The 4th, I believe.
Nobody knows.
Yeah, 4th. It's a Facebook poll, so you can see the results in real time. But I could share them where they are right now. But I don't know if that should
Don't.
I mean, but anyone can see it. Anyone who goes to vote sees it.
Then do. Okay. I don't know.
I think hearing what's in the running will make people more likely to go vote. If we want more votes, we should say what the current leader is.
Okay, well, the current leader by a country mile is Tears of the Kingdom.
Oh,
well, then it won't be overturned. Unless there's a concerted effort.
Tears of the Kingdom currently has 45% of the votes. The runner-up is Baldur's Gate 3 with 27%.
Baldur's Gate 3.
Well, to
great game.
To make sure I don't have any, you know, recency bias, I started playing Tears of the Kingdom again. Oh. It's all I've been playing.
I know.
So it's all okay now.
Yeah. I want to finish that game too. I'm on like the last thrust.
Still great.
I'm on the last thrust of that game.
Yeah, I never finished
it. Yeah, I was telling Damon I did like a sequence break, and then that kind of threw everything off for me, and so I started doing a bunch of side stuff. And now I'm going back on the main stuff, and I had to basically force the things that I missed to happen by going to a sequence of places that I just kind of assumed is where to go, and it kind of treated them like side quests instead of main quests for me. I mean, they put them in my main quest, but like I didn't have to do it. I was in this conversation. They're like, "Oh, you know about all this already?" It was so great. Like the game allowed me to do this really cool sequence break.
That's good.
What's the name of the? People are going to accuse me of being a fake fan now, but it was months ago that I played it. Who's the post office little hawk guy that like shows up everywhere you go and he always says "fly high" or whatever it is that he says?
Yeah, I know what you mean too.
The journalist.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Saw you later.
Yeah, he's great. I don't know why that just popped into my head. I can't recall his name, but as I like, if
I
you're just
him yesterday, I don't know his name.
If you're just like Justin, picture Tears of the Kingdom in your mind. For some reason, he's like what? It's like that, and then my horrible contraptions that never worked right.
Yeah. I go back and forth. But which do I like better, Breath of the Wild or Tears of the Kingdom?
Really?
Yeah. Is it clear for you?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, Tears of the Kingdom.
I don't know. I mean, Breath of the Wild, I also love.
I'm wavering now, too. I just think that's a really interesting open question for me because I do know it improved on all these things, but that doesn't necessarily make it, like, my favorite. The first time I experienced the world was really amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I like what obviously everyone's entitled to their own opinion, but like I think that the dark is incredible and that like we talked about this when the game was contemporary, but the loop between going down there, you're going to the sky to get like the light up berries and then you go down to the dark and then you get a bunch of loot and stuff out of that, the depths, and then coming back up. It like fixed, you know, just every single problem that I had with Breath of the Wild. What a perfect sequel.
Yeah, I agree with that. When I think about the two games, Breath of the Wild feels more like I was exploring. It's like more of an exploration game, and Tears of the Kingdom has like more epic moments.
This definitely like you're dominating the landscape in Tears of the Kingdom. Like you're getting the ability to kind of fly over it and control it and master it. Whereas in Breath of the Wild, you're kind of like you're a victim to it, and you're going along with the flow, and it's more like street level.
Yep.
I just gone through the desert stuff before I had to finish the desert stuff after I dropped off and stuff like that. So I did that, and then it opens up the sky above the desert, and I saw there's an island, but it's really far from everything. So I had to like pull out all the stops and like use a device to get really high and really far over to it, and then float down to it and use stamina. Like it was like crazy to get there, and of course like. Since I hadn't played it in like a month or something, I'd forgotten that like what's usually on those is something that's going to kick your ass. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, the king, whatever they're called, what's the three-headed dragon called?
The Gliaks?
Gliak, yeah. It was, you know, the king Gliak, yeah, which just started, I saw it like pop in, you know, the texture just started to pop in, and then it popped in. I was like, damn it. But I landed anyway, and I fought it once for a long time. But what the problem was, I beat these before, like I can do it. But you need a lot of the bat eyeballs to do it, and to make it easy on yourself. I'm sure there's other ways to do it, but I had just enough bat eyeballs that I thought I could beat it, but I ran out, and then it beat me. So I got it. That's my goal for tonight is to figure out what the hell I'm supposed to do there. Though I think I maybe have some frozen keys eyeballs and stuff like that I can use that I didn't look for last night. I just used my standards.
When you're in the depths, can you use amiibo functionality to drop stuff in?
I think so.
Even though you're in the depths, like they're not, it's not dropping from the sky, just still drop, it'll still drop in?
I believe so. Okay. Why?
They don't drop from the sky, they just kind of appear.
There's a poof in front of you.
Okay. That just gives me some ideas, ways I could finesse my way through the last little bit of the game, I think.
Yeah, because you're on a long depth stretch.
Yeah.
I love the continuity of the God, what are those weird little banana-loving people called?
Yeah, that they ambush you everywhere.
Yeah.
Clan.
The Yika clan.
It sounds like we've never played this game.
Well, I just couldn't. I'm also very tired. The Yiga clan, and then But then in Breath of the Wild, there's like such a clever little bit of continuity of, I had to go back and watch a clip of Breath of the Wild. You fight the Yiga King or clan leader or whatever. And then the way that you defeat him is you knock him into a pit. Mm. You knock him into a pit and it's like, haha, game over. Yeah. But then in Tears of the Kingdom, like he's down in the depths, like rebuilding the Yiga clan. He's cooking with all the different components. It's great. It's like such a great little bit of continuity.
Yeah.
I love that.
It is awesome. Okay, real quick, let's check in with the listeners.
Hey, listeners.
Listeners, remember, you can always reach us at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com, just like Al from Atlanta, Georgia did. Al says, I've been watching your podcast for over 7 years. It's a part of my weekend ritual. I'm 40 years old. I've enjoyed watching you all become fathers who still game. I'm the father of two teenagers. I think this would be a great question for the team. What is your most favorite gateway game? If marijuana is considered a gateway drug, what game was your introduction to a love affair of a genre? South Park, The Stick of Truth was my first turn-based RPG. I've been a fan of the genre ever since. Slay the Spire was my first ever deck-building game, and that inspired me to follow PC gaming because there are more options there.
It's a pretty good answer. Both, but Slay the Spire is a very good answer for like deck builder.
Mm-hmm. Spelunky was my introduction to roguelikes. I'm pretty sure. Can't think of a roguelike that I played before that.
I would maybe, I mean,
I'm a weird one. I tried a bunch of Metal Gears that I didn't like, but then I played Peace Walker because I had to from work, and I really liked it. And now I understand Metal Gear. Like, it just made me understand how Metal Gear games work because I was forced to sit down and play it, but I still don't like 3. I've tried. I'm not saying it's a bad game. I just don't like it, and I need that remake to come through and fix some issues for me.
I think that Spelunky is pretty hardcore to be like a gateway into... Well, roguelike.
I don't think I'd played a roguelike before that, though.
What about Rogue Legacy?
That was before Spelunky?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Spelunky led to it all. Rogue Legacy. Darkest Dungeon, Dead Cells, Slay the Spire.
Sure.
I mean, I'm still looking for a gateway into Souls-likes. Because Elden Ring, you know, I played through the first 3 bosses or something after like Damon and I talked extensively about how to do this and make it enjoyable, but I never beat it and I don't want to play it anymore.
Yeah. And like I ended up loving Elden Ring, but it didn't inspire me to go seek out other Souls-likes.
Mm. Not yet anyway.
Not yet anyway.
I don't know. It's like, as a lifelong gamer who, like, you know, the first video game I can ever remember playing was Spy Hunter on the NES.
Wow. You never played in the arcade before that?
I mean, I was 5, like, you know, so maybe, like, I don't know. But, like, it's hard for me to, like, you know, we've talked about this before, like, just the institutional knowledge of, like, of course you hold down the run button when you're playing a Mario game, but, like, our kids don't know that. Like, new gamers don't know that. Like, it's hard for me to think much about what gateways would be into specific genres, actually.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think was your gateway into first-person shooters?
Well, GoldenEye.
Because that's interesting, because I would say Perfect Dark for me.
Yeah, and then but then Doom, you know, Perfect Doom. Dark. But I don't know that I had a PC that could run Doom at the time. I did have Wolfenstein 3D, but I didn't think much of it at the time when I was a kid.
Yeah.
But I remember, like, not being into, like, big online shooters or that kind of the concept of that, and I got really into Halo 3. So, like, that changed my mind. And then I went back and played Halo 1 and 2 and loved them.
Halo 2 was my...
Basically every Halo.
...was my gateway into team-based multiplayer games. Yeah. For sure. And then StarCraft was my gateway. That was the first game I ever played online against anybody. Like, competitive multiplayer in a video game.
Mm. Yeah.
I've never had, like, a gateway MMO. I've never even played, like, one that I've stuck with or anything like that. You know,
World of Warcraft.
Whole genres I haven't even tried.
It's a great game.
Classic, right?
Yeah.
I love turn-based strategy games. I think my gateway to that was something a little... not widely known, Military Madness on TurboGrafx-16.
Okay.
It's a hexagonal turn-based strategy game that takes place on the moon, I think. And it's basically, it's the Advance Wars, like, model. But I think I played that before Shining Forest, one of my favorite games of all time. So I think Military Madness is probably my first turn-based strategy game.
I mean, I have a very stereotypical, I think the first RPG I remember playing was Final Fantasy VII. I think I missed the 16-bit RPGs. Or I had some, like, I had Phantasy Star and stuff, but I didn't really understand them that much because I was a little bit too little. And then I played Final Fantasy VII and then went back and played Chrono Trigger and 6 and all kind of the all-time greats. And I think that's a very stereotypical, I mean, you know, there's television commercials for it. Like, I think that was the breakthrough RPG for many, many people.
Yeah. Well, but Sam, was Final Fantasy NES your gateway into RPGs?
Yeah, but I didn't like Dragon... Well, I didn't really care about Dragon Warrior or anything. And then I only really liked Final Fantasy games until a few other Square Enix games came out. Mm-hmm. Or Square and Enix games. But, you know, I didn't like a lot of RPGs, but I liked Final Fantasy a lot.
Yeah. There's a lot of... I think that this idea is outdated now of, like, get your partner into games, or here's how to get your girlfriend into games. That's because very kind of like 90s, early 2000s video game magazine kind of thing. But, like... I have a vivid memory of a person that I was dating in high school. Like, I liked video games a lot, and they did not. And so I'm, like, trying to show them these cute games, right? Like, these games that girls would like. And then the game she ended up really liking was Mortal Kombat.
Cool.
And it's like, you know, that memory has stuck with me of, like, you know, teenage Justin learned a lesson of, like, you really can't make assumptions about, like, what somebody's going to be into or what they like or why something will appeal to somebody. It's like, you just give them a menu of options, and then, you know, they'll find something they like.
Sure.
It's funny to think back, though, because, like, I mean, we've been playing during the kind of the genesis of a lot of genres. So, like, yeah. 3D racing, like, I probably played all the early 3D racers. It was like Daytona and, like, you know, Virtual Racer and stuff. And I love them all. But, like, those aren't my gateway to, like, liking Gran Turismo now. Or, like, I played the heck out of Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat, but I don't touch fighting games now.
Yeah.
You know, like, they weren't gateways. They were, like, the first games of their genres. And I played them all and I love them like everybody else, but I didn't stick with them. It's really interesting.
Yeah.
But then the genres that have developed that you've already talked about now, roguelikes, souls-likes, those are like really interesting to look at. Be like, well, what's going to get people into those? And sometimes there has to be a Final Fantasy VII for them, you know? And I still don't think Elden Ring was that for the widest possible audience, but it was really a widely well-received game.
Mm. My first 3D driving game was Hard Driving in the arcades. Sam, you think that's coming to Atari 50?
Maybe.
But do any of those emojis work for that?
There was the car.
The car in the hole.
Could that one, did that have the loop that went upside down?
Yes, it was amazing. And I just wanted to go in the loop and then drive off and crash my car and watch the windshield break.
Yep. That's what I did the first time I played F-Zero. I was like, when I was a little kid, I was like, whoa, how cool is it to watch your car blow up on the city in the distance?
Yep.
It looked awesome.
All right, that brings us to Video Game 20 Questions. Our suggestion this week comes from Andy from Harrison, Ohio. Only two of you this time. Let the questioning begin.
To be fair, Sam and I usually carry it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Apologies to all the scoop guests.
We've been on a streak, unless you count last episode.
That doesn't count.
Which was 100 questions. We're not on a 100 question streak. We're on a 20 question streak.
Yeah.
Those are special episodes. Mm-hmm. I don't think they count.
That's also very different.
We did really bork that one.
But it's totally different trying to guess five in a row than just doing one, right? Like, you get fatigued, you get tired.
I'm still tired from that, though.
I said it on the show. It's like, that's a real thing. You get to question 60 and your brain gets mushy.
Yeah.
Okay, this
that's
game...
That's why somebody was like, you asked the same question right in a row. I'm like well, of course I did.
Yeah. They should try it for themselves. Mm-hmm. Make their own podcast for 700 episodes.
Yep.
Oh, they can be the second video game podcast. So it's really, I mean, Damon, look, this is a controversy. I think someone should make another one.
I'd prefer they didn't.
We don't need a second video game podcast. One is enough. Oh. We already have a podcast about video games.
We have GameScoop at home.
Okay. Did this game come out in the 70s, 80s, or 90s?
Yes.
Was this an arcade game at any point?
No.
Did this game originally come out on 16-bit consoles?
No.
Was it after the 16-bit consoles?
Yes.
Ooh, but it's still a 90s game. Did this game originally come out on the PlayStation 1?
No. Oh. That's 5.
Did it come out on the Nintendo 64?
Yes.
Big round cartridge. My favorite.
Yeah, I like that the N64 carts are dense and kind of heavy.
Mm.
Okay,
they justified those $85 prices.
Yeah, at least $85. It was crazy. Man, Nintendo got hammered in those years where it's like all these PlayStation 1 games are $39.99 and $49.99. And then totally. Like I got Mortal Kombat Trilogy and my grandma was so mad because it was like $85. Okay, was this game developed or published by Nintendo?
Yes.
Ooh, we're going to get it for sure.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of those.
Was this a... Go ahead, Sam.
Did this take place in the Mario universe?
No.
Is this game made by Rare?
Yes.
I think it's the Mickey Mouse Motor Speedway racing game that was made by Rare. The underrated... Everyone forgets that game exists.
It can't be Banjo-Tooie because that came out in the 2000s.
You're right. Well, okay. I mean, there's not that many of them.
Did this game have a... well, go ahead.
There you go.
Well, did you play as an animal? Do you play as an animal in this game?
That's a good question.
Yes, and that's 10.
That's a good question. Do you play as a foul-mouthed animal?
No.
Okay. That's 2000, so...
Do you play as a human in Jet Force Gemini? You're rescuing the little critters, but I don't think...
You play as a dog in that game.
Is that true? You play as the dog?
Yeah, it's the girl, the guy, and the dog.
Got it. The big three.
Mm-hmm. Do you collect jiggies in this game?
Yes.
Well, that's specific.
I you're right that Banjo-Tooie came out in 2000, but just to put it to bed for sure. Is this the first game in a series?
Yes.
Okay, is it Banjo-Kazooie?
Banjo-Kazooie.
Hey!
14 questions.
I feel like you gave us an easy mode coming back.
Well, I picked this when Mark Medina was going to be on.
Oh, look at this B-roll.
High bitrate video.
Look, if you're watching GameScoop at home and you're a younger gamer, this is what Banjo-Kazooie looked like.
This is really what it looked like to us.
Like,
it ran at this frame rate.
And in my head, I picture the game like the Xbox 360 version, right? Like,
yeah.
It's beautiful and widescreen and higher frame rate, but no, that's not what it was.
If you keep showing video like this, I'm going to hit my internet limit for the guys. So keep take it easy.
What? I don't know. This is the Nuts and Bolts teaser. This is the teaser of what would become Nuts and Bolts.
Banjo's eyes always looked weird in this one. I guess Kazooie's too.
I think Nuts and Bolts gets a bad rap.
I like Nuts and Bolts.
Yeah.
I played through the whole thing.
It's just such a case of like, just not giving, it's just too weird and different as a sequel. But like, it's a totally fun and good video game.
It's a very good video game. Just not
I would still expecting. Play the heck out of a Banjo-Kazooie game now.
I know.
I tried Ukulele and it was just okay. Like, I want to play Banjo-Kazooie, the real thing.
I got bamboozled by both ukuleles.
What, the side-scrolling one too?
Yeah. And like, they're both good. They're both like totally well-made, but I'm just like, it's not like hitting the same.
Yeah. Yeah. Ukulele didn't do it for me either. I loved both Banjo-Kazooie and Tooie. And then I think I reviewed the Xbox 360 re-release in 2008.
Wow.
I think
Mario 64 was my gateway to mascot platformers in 3D. Because then I played heck out of Banjo-Kazooie. Yeah.
3D platformers, for sure.
Yeah, of course. It's weird that Banjo-Kazooie is a college game for me. I was in college when that came out. And then 10 years later, it came to 360 when I was working at IGN and I reviewed it. And in my mind, I think, wow, this is a game from my childhood, my distant past. But like now it's been
farther away than that, so much farther.
It's just, time is so weird.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Did you play it on 360? I think I played through most of it again on 360 because it was so smooth.
Yeah, it was great.
They did widescreen and everything.
That and Perfect Dark, they run so well. Perfect Dark is so playable today on Xbox.
I've played it twice on 360 because I played it when it came out. And then, you know, last year, 2 years ago, I just played through it again.
Yeah.
It's the best, most underrated thing. I don't even know if you remember the Xbox, the N64 original, you had to get all 100 jiggies in one life. And like they fixed that in the 360 version. And there's one level like Clanker's Cavern or the boat level, Jolly Roger Bay, whatever the boat level's called, was the worst for that. Because some of the jiggies, like three of them, would be like way over here. Mm-hmm. Ugh.
Yeah. I liked that challenge. I mean, at the time, I 100%ed. I remember 100%ing Banjo-Kazooie for sure, and I beat it. But then when I played it on the 360, I remember distinctly not being able to find jiggies, or not jiggies. The what are they called? The notes, notes. And in the Halloween level, there were some that I just could not find three or something. And I even at that time, I had to use a game back, like text guide. And like it was so unhelpful. But then I had all these flashbacks to doing that at the time, right? You'd like read through, be like, three notes are in a wine barrel in the basement.
Yep.
Three notes are in, a chimney that you have to get up on the top. Like, And I just couldn't figure it out. I just never figured it out.
They're probably down in the gutter. You can go down inside it. I'm going to go ahead and guess.
No, man.
No.
You can like squeeze it. Yep. Do you turn into things in that game?
Yes.
You do that in that one too.
Yeah.
Because in the second one, I remember that more, but you definitely turn into something in each level, like a washing machine or something.
Yeah. No, that was a very real. It's like, again, if you're a younger gamer, you don't understand the pain of like there's 100 notes in every level, then you get 98 of them, and you literally can't find the last two. And you're like, well, like mom's screaming at me to turn the N64 off. Yeah. And like, if you don't get all 100, like you're just hosed.
Yeah. Just leave it on overnight.
Sometimes I would leave it on overnight.
Yeah.
Oh, I did that with every system ever. I've always left that on. Sometimes I'll realize I'm doing that with like current systems. I'll like pause it and be like, I'll be back. Like, well, it's been like 3 hours.
That was it.
Usually your TV or whatever will turn off, but you know, switch one.
Leaving the N64 on was the original quick resume.
Yeah, true. I think I leave.
It's great. I mean, my friends did that with NES, and with the NES, you could like jiggle it and it would completely lose your stuff, and it could wipe your save for like Final Fantasy or something, you know? The Super Nintendo was a little bit safer, but the NES was like, it was like a box with springs inside of it, and the game is just suspended on those springs. Like, you know, you open it up and you're like, no wonder like this thing, if you like just pull up, you know, a controller out, your game just resets or goes blue or whatever.
Well, Andy from Harrison, Ohio says, Banjo-Kazooie is my favorite game, my all-time favorite game. I even named my cats Banjo and Kazooie.
Cute.
Love the show. Viewers, listeners, if you have your own suggestions for Video Game 20 Questions, email them to me at the email address, gamescoop@ign.com. And that is all the scoops that we have for you this week. Next week, we're going to record a day later on Friday so we can talk about all those world premieres. Or, no, what isn't? It's just great game content.
I'm in core.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. It'll go up a little bit later in the day on Friday next week, but we'll still have an episode for you. And not many scoops. After this one, there's only 3 more scoops this year.
That can't be right.
It's right. It's true. 3 more scoops this year, so...
Do them all next week, and then we can just kick back.
That's true.
Man, can you believe that news?
Well, Justin, always...
We can just talk about how much we don't like Starfield for another 3 weeks.
Aw.
I mean, yeah.
I do like Starfield. I didn't love it. I
did not love Starfield.
It is a video game I liked.
I liked Starfield.
Me too. I'm going to go play it right now.
Okay. Well, Justin,
it's
always...
It's the middle of the day.
A treat to have you in studio. I'm glad this is happening more often.
Yeah.
Sam, you gotta come down. It's great.
Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking about next week. We'll see.
My name is Damon. Oh, yeah. Thank you to Mariah working behind the scenes to make this episode possible.
Thanks,
my name is Damon. This is IGN Gamescoop. We're out.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.